Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, August 8th. It's 4 minutes after the hour. We've got a great show today. I want to start with a passage from Ephesians to remind you of how loved you are. It says in chapter 3, starting in verse 16, I pray that out of his glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power through his spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all the saints to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all fullness of God. Ann Voskamp said something which I thought was very profound. The way to live a truly remarkable life is not to get everyone to notice you, but to leave noticeable marks of his love everywhere you go. I think that's a nice piece of wisdom today. We got a great first hour coming up on the show. We're going to talk to Charlie Swanson and Pastor Greg Boyd from Woodland Hills Church. They have gone into a shopping mall and taken a 50-year-old movie theater and decided, hey, we can make this a rallying point for the community. It's a well-known theater in a tired area of town, but people love going to the movie theater, and let's take it over and turn it into a church on Sunday and then continue to run the movie theater. So we've got a lot of opportunities there. And then Dr. Peter Kapsner is going to join us. I call him Peter, and we're going to talk about world and news events coming up in just a few minutes. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning. As always, I'm happy to be humbly serving you this morning. Be back in a minute. Welcome to the Early Morning Late Show, where we talk about God and top-of-the-mind news stories, and then, weather permitting, we'll talk about the weather. In 1967, in the corner of a mall parking lot in Maplewood, the Plaza Theater opened its doors. And if I do the math, let's see, carry the one, divide by four. That's been 50 years now, and today that humble theater is more than just a theater. It's become a church as well, and Woodland Hills took it over. And I have on our studio lines Charlie Swanson and Pastor Greg Boyd are my guests. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
A couple general interest questions. How much Sticky Bee Gone did you need to clean the floors?
It was quite a bit. We had a lot of volunteer help from the church, but it's in much better shape now than it was a few years ago.
And yeah, it was quite a mess.
Yeah, my second question is a concessions question. Is it open during church? And I would love a Greg Boyd sermon with a $14 bag of popcorn, complete with butter-flavored topping.
That'd be a treat. That's a good idea for increasing attendance. We should try that, Charlie. Just kind of free popcorn and pop and whatever.
Yeah. So
I like it.
I love the fact that you've taken something like this and decided that you were going to – I mean, this is a – the Plaza is a rallying point for the community, isn't it?
Yeah. When we bought the property, it was 2000, Charlie?
Yeah,
I think it was 2000. We had to go through a lot of committee meetings and zoning things or whatever. And we really picked up very quickly that movie theater was really important to the community. And it was used a lot. And people were really concerned about keeping movies there. And so we thought that would be a good thing to do.
So tell me about tell me more about the vision that you had for going into this space, because it's an established space. People know it. They love it. They've been going to movies there for 50 years. So it seems like it's a nice logical step to plant a church there.
I mean, part of it was just kind of happenstance, I think, because the theater was just a part of the real estate deal. The larger church building that we're in used to be a big Shopper City and a Builder's Square, but the theater was just kind of part of the sale of the property there in Maplewood.
The nice thing is that the church has a place to have service on Sunday, and then also the theater continues to run as a theater. So you're getting a nice use of the building.
Well, it's two separate buildings. So the theater is alongside of the Shopper City building that we have the church in.
Okay.
So we thought initially we'll just keep the movie theater going, and we leased it out to someone just as a service to the community. But then we saw a ministry opportunity. We have a ministry that we partner with that serves at-risk youth to teach them job training skills and money management and all sorts of stuff like that. And so now we use the theater, keep on running the same movies and stuff. We renovated it, all that, but we use it as a job training ministry for these at-risk youth.
So, Charlie or Greg, whoever wants to jump in on this, tell me why you think this is really going to be good for the community.
Well, it's mainly, you know, a way of blessing the community. They all liked it, and it's been kind of a staple there. And so it's, in some ways, it's you know, Jeremiah tells us to bless the city we find ourselves in. And so by providing, we do second run theater. It's a second run theater. So we offer movies at like $3. And for, you know, at a time when most movies are charging $10, that's a real benefit to people. And I think we're only one of two second run theaters that are still running in the Twin Cities. But and so it was just a way of, initially just a way of serving the community. And now it's expanded as a way of helping the at-risk youth who are in the community.
Nice. Well, talk about being church outside of the traditional church settings. I mean, I think this is great that you found a facility and a building, and this is not traditional church. So tell me what it's like to do church in a non-traditional setting.
I think, like Greg said, it's mainly a way that you can serve people through your actions. We're not very overt or explicit. When people come to the movies there, they're there to see a film, not to, you know, to come to church. But we want to make people aware that this is a way that Woodland Hills is serving this part of the east side of the Twin Cities. So, I mean, we've got a little bit of information up on the walls, the fact that the church next door is running this theater. And our goal is just to keep providing this as a resource for the community.
We'll talk about the community a little bit. Maybe you can try to paint a picture of what the people, who are the people you're working with and what some of their needs are. And
the theater is just one of a number of ministries that we're doing to for the community. We partner with a food shelf that's also part of the church. We've got two different homeless ministries and a daycare center, affordable daycare center for lower income families. And we have just a number of ministries like that because our conviction is that, you know, we're supposed to be the body of Christ and to manifest God's love in every way, shape, and form we can to all the people that are around us. And so, yeah, the theater is just one of a number of ways that we're trying to actively be the body of Christ, bearing witness to the love of God towards, you know, to all different kinds of people meeting their needs. It's been working spectacularly so far.
Yeah. How many seats do you have at in the theater or the church?
There are two screens in the theater. Each one has about 225 seats in it. And then our auditorium in the church building seats about 1,600, I think.
Mm-hmm. And do you already have some lessons you've learned through all of this that you didn't know before?
Absolutely. I mean, like Greg said, one of the cornerstone, you know, purposes that we have for even running the theater is this job skills program. And we do that in cooperation with an organization called The Lift on the east side of St. Paul. So they actually hire, they interview and hire and do mentorship with a bunch of at-risk kids. And those are the people that actually staff the theater. And that program has been really... really eye-opening and successful. We've had some young people that have come in as staff members and been promoted into, you know, leadership roles. One of them is actually an assistant manager at this point. Some of those successes are, you know, obviously really cool to look back on, but there are certainly challenges too. I mean, when you intentionally hire people with risk factors. You know, we've had, you know, some instances of some theft. You know, there's some drug habits that some of the staff haven't been able to overcome. The population we're drawing from, you know, is not your typical, you know, not your typical young people that you, you know, are at the top of your hire list. But that's the point of the program. I mean, we're trying to give people a first shot at a first job so they can get some experience and then move on and actually build a good work history.
All right, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Charlie Swanson and Pastor Greg Boyd and the Plaza Theater and how we can all start maybe thinking outside the box just like they are. Be back in a minute. Welcome back. We are talking to Charlie Swanson and Pastor Greg Boyd from Woodland Hills Church on the acquisition of the Plaza Theater and what they're doing over there. A former pastor of mine once said, if everything you do works, you're not being creative enough. I was wondering, if it's going the way you thought it would.
Greg, what do you think?
I personally think it's going better than I thought it would. When we first, you know, got into this, I mean, we didn't know really how to run a theater, what was all involved in that. Fortunately, we had a guy in the church who was very interested in doing that kind of thing. But, you know, we didn't know quite what to expect. And it just turned out spectacular. I mean, the attendance is, well, Charlie knows more about this, but it seems to me that the parking lot's full a lot more than it used to be. And it seems like people are really happy about it.
I mean, going into it, like Greg said, we weren't sure. It was kind of an experiment. The goal we had was if the business can kind of break even and we can pay our bills and we can pour into the community through the job skills program. And, you know, we've also got a partnership with Union Gospel Mission and some elementary schools. If we can do this community outreach and have this business kind of stay afloat, we'll consider it a success. And a few years in, it looks like it's gonna fly.
Is there an online service you can watch as well at the theater?
No, it's, you know, traditional movie theater. So you go and you buy your $3 ticket and you grab your popcorn and you sit, sit there for a couple hours. And
What about the church service? That's what I meant.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I assume you had to go into the theater to watch the movie.
That's a fair question. We've got an active podcasting audience. Because of the books that Greg has written, you know, there are a lot of people from around the world that out of curiosity, you know, check out our church and then become podcasters. We don't do any streaming services.
Okay.
But we've got, you know, quite a few thousands of people that tune into us every week via podcast.
Nice. And then
something like 20,000, right?
20,000.
I think it's more like 15, but it's a lot.
There's the power of the Greg Boyd sermon right there.
Oh, shucks,
Greg. I know what you're thinking now. All right. This is a out-of-the-box kind of thinking, so maybe you can offer some encouragement to other people who are listening in the network that think, hey, that's really a good idea. What kind of encouragement can you give other churches to think outside of this little box?
Well, I wouldn't, you know, encourage everyone to start a theater. it happens to be where we're at, you know, and so you have to look at what resources do you have. But I always, you know, think that the church, the idea that the church is defined by a weekend service is, I just think, fundamentally flawed. You know, we're called to be the church, not to go to church. I mean, it's good that we go to a building that we call church, but it's just to be thinking about what are the needs of your community and what can you do to meet those needs and to be willing to take risks and to, you know, step out and be bold in that and, you know, to try new things. And mainly listen to God, because God is supremely creative and can download into your brain some really cool ideas if you're listening and willing to, you know, to take a step out on things. You know, we have, because of these other ministries we have, including the lift to these at-risk youth, but with the food shelter and other things, we have people coming into the church all the time that are normally wouldn't darken the doors of a church. And I think this is beautiful. And there are, you know, some things that go along with that. You know, you're not going to always have, you know, unscraped walls and unstained carpet or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But to realize that, you know, that you don't own the building, it belongs to God, and to, you know, just open it up to be including people that ordinarily wouldn't be included. To be creative and bold, I think that's a crucial thing.
I think that's great. When you take over a theater that's 50 years old, what's the first thing that needs fixing? I'm just curious.
Other than the sticky floors that you mentioned,
yeah.
The biggest thing for us was we were still running 35mm films. So the biggest investment we made was in digital projection. Not something that the customers necessarily noticed, but it's made our operations a heck of a lot easier, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm. And have you had any stories from people that say, gosh, this has given me kind of a new look at Christians?
Yeah, I mean, when we took over operations, like Greg said, we'd always owned the building since moving onto the property. But when we took over the operations, there were a lot of people that I think were pretty nervous about what it's going to look like for a church to now run this beloved theater that they've been going to for decades. But after that initial sort of fear wore off and they saw that, you know, things weren't dramatically changing, we've actually had people attend the church and come up to our information desk and say, hey, you know what? I was at the theater. It's really a lot cleaner. It's nicer. I like the new projectors. I just wanted to check you guys out and see what you're like. And that is, I think we would, you know, it wasn't the purpose that we had in starting to run the theater, but it's certainly a fantastic fringe benefit. That's for sure.
I think at first the people thought that the church was going to come in and we're going to show all Christian films. And there's a lot of concern about that. And they're really happy that we were going to continue to show the standard movies that are in theaters.
So if I wanted to look at pictures, is there a website I can go to or a Facebook page I can poke around at just to see what it looks like?
Yeah, if you go to theplazatheater.com,
okay.
From there it links to our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/theplazatheater. If you dig back into the photos, especially on Facebook, you can see some of the images of the renovations that we did and kind of what the theater looks like. It's just kind of it's not a glamorous looking building from the outside, but we're pretty proud of the renovations we've done inside. And, you know, the community still kind of, they continue to love coming. So that's good.
Yeah, I love the innovative ideas, and I love the heart that you have for wanting to use the church all the time. That's just an awesome, awesome deal. Thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll continue to pray for the endeavor. Thank you so much, Charlie Swanson, Pastor Greg Boyd from Woodland Hills Church. Have a great rest of the day. God bless you.
Thanks, you too. Right.
Yep. We'll take a short break and be right back with more of the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 28 minutes after the hour. So glad you are with us this morning. I hope your day is starting well. We were talking about innovation with Charlie Swanson and Greg Boyd, and it's always important to take risks and to do things that are a little bit out of the old, comfort zone? Is that what we say? But it's important to do that, and we're going to be talking in the second hour today with Dr. Glenn Pickering, and we're going to talk about betrayal. If you have been a person involved in betrayal, how do you process that? How do you get over it? How do you heal from it? How do you move on? How do you forgive? That's going to be an interesting time of discussion. And if you want to be involved in that conversation, you can give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. And if you come on the air with a question, we'll put you in the drawing for one of Max Lucado's new books. And that is called again. What's that book's name again? I'm always freezing at it.
Anxious for Nothing.
Anxious for Nothing.
Yep. It's brand new. You can't even buy it yet, but we're giving them away. How does that work?
And your odds are pretty good that you're going to win one. If
they
are there today.
Next hour.
Yep. I feel certainly sorry for a church in Fargo. They were vandalized recently, $100,000 in damage. They're looking for whoever broke 36 windows at Nativity Church and School. So our Fargo friends, who you have our prayers, $100,000 in damage. That's a lot. I would say the leading suspect was Ernest T. Bass. He was a rock thrower. Anyway. All right. We've got Peter Kapsner in studio, and we're going to talk to him about a whole number of things. I'm going to pick his brain like crazy today. So we're going to have that conversation in just a minute. It is half past the hour. Good morning. So glad you're with us. Be back in a minute. If you're picking up drive-through coffee on your way to work this morning, tell them Bill says hi. He's from the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio. Good morning, 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Taking time to focus on the good things in your life and career can help you stay positive. Author and life coach Valerie Burton reminds us that God is in control and has good things in store.
It's a balance that we're hoping for more while at the same time being grateful for what we have. And it's important for us to express gratitude, I think, on a daily basis. But even if you do it once or twice a week, I mean, it's even been shown to boost your immune system and help you sleep better. I mean, it's important for us to be thankful and to notice our blessings. And if you're feeling down right now, you know, close your eyes, take a breath, and say, you know, what are my three best moments so far today? You know, it's so easy for us to notice what's going wrong, but sometimes it's the simple things that are going right. It might have been an unexpected call from a friend or somebody that opened the door for you or let you get that parking space. I mean, we have to be constantly aware of the good that's around us. It can be very easy to kind of fall into that pit where we're so focused on the negative.
I like that. I'm going to have to go back and listen to that. Valerie Burton was the author, speaker, and life coach. Go to myfaithradio.com and type in Valerie Burton or training yourself to think differently, and odds are likely you'll get to that interview. We'll take a short break and be back with Peter Kapsner, who's in studio.
I was born that way is not an excuse to justify wrongful behavior. This is Jim Garlow. I have a deep concern and love for one who struggles with his or her sexual identity. We all have flaws and failures in our life for which we'd love to dismissively say, oh, I was born that way. We can choose not to act them out, however. That's called maturity, self-restraint, self-discipline. The relentless coercion of perversity we're experiencing in this country is not about having the same rights. It's about destroying anyone who dares oppose moral depravity. The radical LGBT cause insists on infringing on others' rights of freedom of thought, of religion, and freedom of speech. They're demanding that everyone agree with their behavioral choices. We must stop using identity politics as a way of demanding entitlement, claiming injustices, and blaming others. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Morning. Of course, it's your job to make it good, and we're going to help you do that as best we can. Bill Arnold here in studio. I've got with me Peter Kapsner, or should I say Dr. Peter Kapsner. I don't really think of you as the big doctor. I just think of you as Peter.
Well, I appreciate that. That's smart. Yeah, I make my kids try to call me doctor once a year, and that's about it.
Once a year. Yeah. But professor here at University of Northwestern, also do some teaching at Bethel as well.
I do, yep.
And I want to talk a little bit this morning about a number of things, but I want to start with this professor at the University of Georgia, and this, try not to laugh and swallow your coffee before I say this so you don't spit it through your nose. The University of Georgia professor has adopted a stress reduction policy that will allow students to select their own grades if they feel unduly stressed by the ones they earned. Oh,
you sent that to me yesterday.
I did. I couldn't resist.
My first reaction is the guy's my absolute hero. I mean, there would be students lined up outside my class. I'd never have to grade a paper again. Just give yourself whatever you feel is right today. I don't want you to be stressed out.
How would that professor even be worth his salary? Why would we even want to pay him?
Well, now I understand I'm like insulated in some ivory tower, but I do hear that the real world can actually be filled with a bit of bumps and bruises and stuff. So maybe preparing our young people for that might be mildly helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think about, so my kids, we got five kids, and when my son was in Little League, he was right in that level where they all get participation trophies. So it's kind of similar to this classroom we're talking about. You just show up and get the trophy. But he spent some time in Scotland when he was really young, as we lived there for a bit. And it was so different over there. Mm-hmm. So when he would play soccer out on the playground out there, and if they kicked a bad shot, they would just say, hey, that was rubbish. Mm-hmm. And it didn't speak to the self-esteem. It didn't, you know, set him for a downward spiral in his life. And then they would just say, try it again. So I remember by the time we moved back to the States and we're in Little League, and I was coaching the baseball team, and a young man was struggling on the mound to throw strikes, kind of that whole thing where they start throwing it over the backstop and all of that. And I finally took him out of the game, and I just said, hey, buddy, really good job. And I meant it, because the kid was battling through everything. But my son, Caleb, pulled me aside. He said, so, Dad, was that an American good job, or was that a Scottish good job? And you can tell the difference between the two, where we're kind of pandering and patronizing and not helping our young people prepare for actual life.
Mm-hmm. So if we get participation trophies just for showing up and doing stuff, what happens when you actually enter the adult world and you're at your first business meeting and you make a suggestion that people don't necessarily respond to positively, and your whole self-esteem collapses? Because what up with that?
Yeah, I think this idea, you know, to actually be in a relationship with people means stuff's going to get rocky from time to time, and you have to learn how to work through that, I think, so often. But where I think we're setting up people for failure in a lot of different kinds of relational settings, because they're just not used to having to work through when things get difficult.
Mm-hmm.
We were, you think about it, life in church, stuff gets tough at times. And how often do we just bail out of the relationship, or even things like our marriages and that kind of stuff? If you're not set up to think when stuff gets tough or people don't like something, how do we work through it with mutuality and other-centered care for one another?
Well, how many messages a day, Peter, do we see or hear that life should be fun and carefree and without problems?
Yeah, you know, I've read a fair amount of the Bible over my lifetime, and I have yet to run across those verses in the text.
Yeah,
now, I mean, there might be Ephesians 15 or something that you know, some lost document I haven't seen, but my understanding is we don't have a lot of that invitation in the biblical text.
Yeah, but so we're really not doing much of a favor to our kids if we don't let them understand the difficulty of a disappointment, and sometimes you do make mistakes and bad shots, and that's okay, too.
You do.
And hopefully it'll make you better.
Absolutely. You do. And you know, it might sound cliche, but Jesus does promise that he will always be there and be with you. And that idea, I think, is so critical for walking through any dimension, however small or large, of suffering and turmoil mm-hmm. in life. And we got to teach that early with our kids.
Yeah. What is it with kids that have this natural tendency to want to tease or pick on other kids? I mean, it's almost, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to find our humor in life? What are we trying to do?
Yeah, you know, it starts early, doesn't it?
I don't know.
I think that sense of power over other people, where there's that, you know, life can be one big anxious journey into the unknown and the future. And I think all of us are in different ways trying to grasp after how to control the future. And one way we do that is if we can control the relationships around us by pegging people or naming them or giving them a like, we control you sort of thing. I think it starts very subtly at a very early age, but you see it play itself out quite a bit in life.
But you see kids at such early ages kind of using the kinds of jokes and saying the kinds of stupid things that, like, that we've been saying that forever. It's like, where'd that come from?
Yeah, you know, they do. They pick up so much, don't they?
Oh,
I am always, it is a little sobering and kind of mind-boggling how sometimes I look at my kids and they all of a sudden they sound just like me on something, and I think, whoa, that's, we may need to think about that one, what they pick up from all of us.
Yeah, because I've never really heard where, you know, we're told not to bully, and we teach our kids not to bully, which, of course, you know, is smart, but we also really never talk to them about what is a good sense of humor and how to build somebody up with humor versus tear them down.
Yeah, that's very true. But that just starts with how you see other people, right? You know, if you see other people as valuable and worthwhile.
Right.
But again, I think you can teach that stuff when kids are 5, 6, and 7. It's funny, we, you know, obviously our kids, they have their ups and downs like all families do, but my wife and I use the phrase tending to the shalom or to the peace or the wholeness of your brother and take a lot of that out of Genesis with them. And it's amazing when my two youngest, Simon and Samuel, my youngest boys, just get into a big fight around something. They're just pounding the tar out of each other. but we can come back, and instead of just, you know, when we're at our best, and this isn't always the case, but we try to come back and not just separate them and give them timeouts, but just talk about, so how does this action shape the future of your relationship and whether there's going to be peace between the two of you? And I'm amazed. They kind of, they get it. They can even use that language over time.
That's impressive. Peter, there was, speaking of being a little bit bullied, there was a kid who was bullied in school recently, and he had some support from 50 motorcycle bikers that showed up to support him. Come on, talk about that.
I saw that. There's one part of me, Bill, that just loved it. I love that this poor young man, because he had been bullied in a few different schools, and I think it even contemplated suicide as a result of some of that. And so to have all of these bikers rally around him was really delightful to see that people could actually be for him and have his back. And I'd be curious how it plays out now in school moving forward, because on the other side of it, there's this big show of power as he walks into the school around that. But at the very least, I think it was a delightful moment for him to see that there are actually people in the world that'll have his back.
Mm-hmm. Peter, I want to take a break. When we return, I want to ask you about the trustworthiness of the media. And also Al Gore's new climate movie. And also the bombing of this Minnesota mosque. So
yeah,
we got our plate is full when we come back. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm in studio with Peter Kapsner. We'll be back in just a minute. All right, we are back. 13 minutes until the top of the hour, having a lively conversation with Dr. Peter Kapsner, who's in studio, professor here at University of Northwestern and a little work at Bethel, and just an all-around swell guy with five kids. So what's not to like about him?
Absolutely nothing. I can't think of a thing.
So interesting how Al Gore's new movie's coming out, from what I understand, which I won't see.
Yeah, he's coming out with round two about the climate and just some of these things about the inconvenient truth. Part two is what he's coming out with relative to this.
And the Trump administration is trying to change some of the terminology at the Department of Agriculture. They've been told to avoid using the term climate change in their work and instead use weather extremes.
That's what you were just saying. And the power of language to shape public perception is, you had sent me an article even the other day about political correctness and the power of language in that.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting to watch politicians try to sort out how to shape the psyche of our people through language like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought it was a little ironic that Al Gore, my understanding is that he uses triple or quadruple the amount of energy in his massive,
five times
the amount in
yeah.
his mansion that than us commoners do relative to this energy thing. So.
Yeah. And it's, instead of climate change adaption, staff are asked to use resilience to weather extremes.
Resilient. I don't find myself super resilient to weather
I'm
extremes. I'll say that.
I'm not either. I swear, like in December, I'm freezing.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's time to get out of Dodge at that point.
I'm not at all resilient. All right. I am haunted a little bit by the craziness coming out of North Korea. I mean, this guy's a complete nut job.
When he starts talking about revisiting thousands and thousands of times of damage on the West or America as a result of these sanctions. And it's one of those things we have to wrestle with. Do you ever use force? Because that seems to be increasingly what's on the table is if there's a lack of response to sanctions and a lack of response to other mechanisms of pressure, at what point do you come in and use force? And especially as a Christian, how do you navigate that conversation? Can force ever be used for good long term? And I think we've seen evidence of that in the past. And I think we've seen where it goes really wonky really fast.
And just the depravity that's going on in North Korea, you feel so sorry for those people.
Yeah, I just can't imagine what they're living under on a day to day. I try to put myself in their position. I woke up this morning and my biggest issue was having to get in here at this ungodly hour in the morning with the two of you. And I can't imagine waking up to not having much future.
We would have preferred street clothes, but the jammies are fine today.
Hey, my Elmo jammies are working well right now. I love them.
Maybe next time you'll dress appropriately. Let's shift a little bit of our attention now to a national news story, which is happening here in Minnesota, and that was a bomb that went off in a mosque over the weekend. Of course, that's become FBI saying it's terrorism. The governor is saying it's terrorism. I'm not quite so sure yet. I mean, I know it's a terroristic attack, but I'm curious as to if it might be an inside job as well, because that's not out of the question.
It's not. It's interesting that there hasn't been any claim of responsibility, and I mean, I'm no forensic criminologist or anything, but they haven't found or seem to locate even a hint of the trail of where it might have come from. So I think there's lots of theories in play right now relative to what took shape.
And the fact that they knew exactly where to throw the bomb, again, I wonder, was there a light on in the building? And let's just throw the bomb where the light is, or did the person who threw the bomb knew exactly where the imam's office was because it wanted to be a surgical strike, thinking he might be there. I don't know.
Yeah, clearly somebody seemed to have some kind of information. It wasn't just a random, let's drive by and throw something at a building. There does seem to be more to the story.
It certainly seems
than,
that way.
Than that. And you can see it either direction about how violence, you can see trying to do an action to incite more violence then. And that tends to be the way these things work.
Mm-hmm. All right, Peter, after my show, we have a lot of trustworthiness issues in the media. I mean, not at this show, of course.
No. We're on straight and narrow. Yep,
straight and narrow. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk about it. What can we believe nowadays?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was listening to a reporter from one of the large broadcasting companies. I believe in this case it was CNN, but that was hardly, that's hardly just the only one. I know that's the punching bag these days, but I was interested because when I was in high school, I was part of the school newspaper and we're not talking about extensive journalism there, but it was pounded into our head that we were reporters of facts, that we followed the story and simply reported and didn't try to shape the public opinion as much. But I was really interested when I heard the CNN reporter say that the reason why he got into journalism was to help shape the public landscape and to shape the way people think about our life, our country, our relationships, all of that. I had never heard that relative to journalism, and yet to make a mark these days, you sort of have to just report the facts is pretty boring. Mm-hmm. So I can understand people are not stupid. We sometimes treat people as stupid, and when people are in positions of power, but people are going to rebel pretty quickly when they know somebody is trying to shape how they think about everything. And I think journalism's got caught up in that to a large degree.
Well, I want to say yesterday the New York Times said they're recommitting themselves to fair and balanced reporting, which is self-incriminating. Then you're pretty much saying we were biased.
Absolutely.
If you were saying that you're recommitting to it.
Well, it's sort of the irony of the whole thing, right? Is I think a news organization could create a pretty healthy and even profitable niche if they actually just went back to reporting the facts. I think people would respond really favorably to that.
Well, I wonder if they would. I mean,
well, I think from a trustworthiness standpoint, I mean, clearly we like to listen to the people that reinforce what our existing opinion is. So so there is that dimension of it. I'd be curious how many independent thinkers are really left that just want to really think through the issue from both sides. So you're right. It might completely flop if they went that direction.
I have no idea. It's all about, I just say follow the money because the money is what they're interested in.
Absolutely.
And but what about the fairness? Will the press ever treat President Trump with any fairness, with the exception of a cable show here and there?
Yeah, it sure doesn't seem like it. And I do think there's, having been in a wide variety of university kinds of settings, and I'm not talking about the ones I'm in now of Bethel and Northwestern, but there is a sense in which that elitist mindset is part of the deal, where the standing outside of the common person's journey and just trying to dictate all the terms across the board. And I think obviously Trump won on the platform of reaching out to just the average person in the United States. And that's going to be pretty threatening to the power that's existed among the media for quite some time that come out of some of the coastal elite settings.
So that'll be interesting. So we've got economy that seems to be working again. The stock market's crazy.
It is crazy.
It's literally, I mean,
if over 22,000 from what I saw.
22,000. Is it up 19% since Trump took office?
I don't follow it closely, but that's the biggest jump I can remember in a long time.
Yeah. I don't know who gets credit for that, but, is there any indication you can say, hey, way to go?
Yeah, well,
is there any bones we can throw him?
I mean, fair and balanced would be appropriate with this. It doesn't mean the Trump administration has been perfect across the board, but could we just talk about both sides of the different conversations? I think would be fair and balanced at this point.
And then as we're moving towards trying to get our country great again, I just saw a report, 1.1 million fewer Americans on food stamps.
Is that, I did not see that report. Yes. Yeah, yeah, that's...
And Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, asked his dad once, he said, Dad, how come you never went on assistance? And he said, because they take away your manhood.
That's really interesting. And that's, you know, part of, I remember, back when I was doing some of my work, it was around the lack of initiation rituals among our young people in our culture, that to invite people into something bigger than themselves, that they could actually pull up their bootstraps a bit. And people need help too. It's that balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are people that start way behind the starting line compared to other people, and we have to provide some help and assistance. But, you know, it seems like either extreme, where you just throw people out to the gutter, or you just give handouts across the board. How do we live in a balanced kind of way relative to this?
Yeah. So when does school start?
I don't know. It's early August, yeah. So probably in a few weeks here. I'm, you know, it's victory through denial right now.
Exactly. And did you get a chance to take your family on a vacation this summer?
We are heading to our family cabin in northern Michigan here in about a week or so.
Oh, great. So you're going to spend a week there? Or?
We are. They're going to get ahead of me a little bit. We've got 8 new chickens at our house, and so I've got to take care of the chickens while the rest of them head out for a bit, and then I'll be joining them later. So, yeah, it wasn't all that smart maybe to buy chickens before you've built a coop. And who knew they got bigger really fast?
Oh, you make me laugh. Peter, thanks so much for coming into the studio. Have a great day, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, thanks,
Bill. Soon. Yep, you bet. All right, it's 4 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back. Coming up in the next hour, Dr. David Stevens from Christian Medical and Dental Association and Dr. Glenn Pickering is going to be with us. We're going to talk about betrayal. If you've been in a relationship that involved betrayal and you have to figure out how to forgive and process and move on, you're not going to want to miss that interview as well. We'll be back in just a minute.
The early bird catches the worm. The really early bird catches the early morning late show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
All right, a couple minutes until the top of the hour. Peter Kapsner, thank you so much for coming in studio. What a delight he is. And interesting guy. I like him very much. He'll be with us next week as well because I want to continue our conversation with him. We have a very busy second hour coming up. Again, I will repeat myself. Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association is with us. And then Dr. Glenn Pickering. And we are going to talk about betrayal, which is going to be a big subject, a tough one. And if you want to call and ask a question, be on the program, you will enter to win one of Max Lucado's new books. And you can get it before it hits the streets. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.